Larry. Fucking Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
Is there no sweeter sound than that of your own name buried in cheers and applause? I think not. Hey, this episode is part 4 of a series of shows that began back in December of 2020, Larry's Road Trip Redux. The series chronicled the second round-trip cross-country drive I did within about 90 days, over 7,000 miles this time. Why am I doing part 4 now? Well, because some things happened that were so timely and perishable and important that I had to take a little detour. Part 1 was entitled Ghost Nation, because when you string together enough ghost towns, a country becomes a ghost nation. Countless businesses, from restaurants to motels, Indian trading posts that once flourished had been just abandoned, not closed, as one might do when intending to reopen at some point. No, these things were abandoned. Owners walked away from them without even bothering to shut the door behind them. It was eerie and sad. And in that episode, we met what I call classic Americans. They are an endangered species. They're being hunted, harassed, and canceled by another group. At the time of that episode, I had no name for them. So let's just call them what they are. MFs. No, not motherfuckers. Something much worse. They are Marxist filth. I'll circle back to that in a little bit. Now, part 2 is entitled Fear Freaks and Costume Kooks, and gave a tour de force of how some states live in terror and others don't. And now, with a full year of collected data, it appears that states that enforce terror, double masking, and lockdowns, those states produce a higher China virus body count than those that don't. Especially New York and California. How about that? In part 3 of the road trip, we lingered in the Texas panhandle, where an aged cowboy exhibited a kind of American courage that's become quite rare. He put himself in danger for total strangers, my family. And he was not wearing a badge or a gun or a uniform, and he sure as hell wasn't drawing a salary for his heroism. Nobody makes thank you heroes banners for guys like that. Nobody thanks them for their service or pins medals on their chests. And they don't make TikTok videos either. But they're still out there. A few of them, anyway. So if you want to catch up on those 3 episodes, you can listen at thatlarryshow.com in the December tab. Now, what about part 4? Well, we've saved the best for last, starting with Nashville. I had not been there in a long time. And being a huge country music fan, well, I just had to visit. While states in the Northeast were at a standstill with panic and lockdowns, Tennessee was pretty normal, especially the city of Nashville. Dinner there was easy and fun. The waitstaff didn't act as if every customer was a deadly pathogen. The food was kick-ass comfort food. Nice vibe. Afterwards, out on the strip, it was more of the same. Honky Tonk Row was open for business. It wasn't crowded, but it wasn't empty either. As we walked past a few joints bathed in neon, one in particular had some amazing music spilling out into the night. We stopped and looked and listened, and a woman opened the door and invited us inside. Now, being from the California gulag, where there's a fucking rule or law for every conceivable situation, in any minute of the day, my wife announced that our daughter was only 15. The woman laughed and said, "That's okay, honey. You don't have to be 21 to listen to music. Come on in." We stepped inside. She showed us to a table and took our drink orders. As I waited for the drinks, I flashed on an incident at a restaurant in Los Angeles when that same daughter of mine was just a two-month-old infant asleep on my lap in her car seat. While waiting for a table, we sat at the bar and ordered margaritas. The bartender looked at me and said that I'd have to take that baby somewhere else because no one under 21 was allowed at the bar. And I laughed. I thought he was joking. He wasn't. That's the difference between California with a K and Tennessee with three E's for triple easy and two N's for not nuts. Turns out the honky-tonk we visited is one of Nashville's oldest and most storied, Tootsie's Orchid Lounge. It's on three levels, and each floor had a different band. They were all great, but the one on the first floor was world-class. The lead guitarist was just a kid, and he was as good as any I had ever heard anywhere. We listened for a couple of hours, and what a thrill it was to hang with some other people in a saloon, dig on some great music, have a few drinks, and laughs. All that had been forbidden for an entire year by the morons who run California. When we left and hit the night air, my wife read my mind when she wondered aloud if we just attended a super spreader event. Well, it turned out it was not. How about that? Kind of like a little tiny Sturgis without the motorcycles, which was also not a super spreader event, despite what the screaming doomsayers claimed. Next day, we hit some ferocious rainstorms, the kind that flood the roadbed and render windshield wipers useless. We had to get off the main highway. And fortuitously, we exited near an attraction I had never heard of, Casey Jones Village in Jackson, Tennessee. It's one of those only-in-America places. I'd always thought Casey was pure legend, like Paul Bunyan. But Jones was a real guy who may or may not have caused a very real train wreck. Casey was a legendary engineer. The railroad loved him because he nearly always managed to get trains where they were going on time. He also had his critics who said he ran them too fast. Then he torqued engine number 382 up to 100 miles an hour and rammed a stationary train. Bang. On the night in question, it was terribly foggy. Casey was covering another guy's shift, who was MIA, and so by the time the train left the station, it was 75 minutes behind, and Casey figured he could make that time up. He hauled ass out of Memphis like a bat out of hell and was setting records between water stops. When he neared his destination, which was a little place called Vaughan, Mississippi, he had actually made up most of that time, but that's where he plowed into a train stalled in the tracks. The flagman swore he was at his post and tried to warn Casey to slow down, but Casey's fireman, who jumped to safety before impact, he swore the flagman was not at his post. It's a pretty cool story, and that's what the guy thought who built the Casey Jones Village back in the 1970s. The place has a locomotive and a caboose and a few cars and a lot of other old-time railroad stuff. Of course, there's a restaurant and the obligatory gift shop. And in that gift shop was no end of train whistles and keychains, as well as some creamed possum in a can, and Elvis Presley barbecue sauce in seven different flavors. You gotta love that kind of inventory. As we meandered through the place, it seemed to have an extra layer of melancholy about it. Was it the crappy weather? The lack of visitors due to lockdowns and travel bans? Probably. But more than that, the dude who had built the place so long ago had just died that very day of the Wuhan flu. Seems he was a pretty popular boss. No wonder everyone looked kind of lost. Worlds within worlds and stories within stories. Maybe he finally got to meet Casey and got the story straight from him. I sure hope so. On the walk back to the car, I noticed something that really put it all in perspective. Not 30 yards from a massive old locomotive stood a half dozen Tesla charging stations. The miles just clicked by. We didn't have as much time to stop where we wanted, but there was no way we could not stop in Amarillo at the world-famous Big Texan, home of the free 72-ounce steak dinner. How do they do that? Well, you have to read the fine print. It's free if you can wolf it down in less than 1 hour. Now that's 4.5 pounds of beef. And God knows how many potatoes or beans and biscuits are included in that dinner. And I'd imagine that if, in 60 short minutes, that plate doesn't look licked clean by a pack of coyotes, you're going to pay for that steak. Of course, it can be done. And there's a plaque in the joint commemorating the achievement, which amazingly did not feature some enormous dude, but a rather diminutive female named Molly Schuyler, who weighed in at a svelte 125 pounds. Amazing. But the Big Texan is more than a garish, kitschy roadside attraction. It's a cultural icon of a vanishing America. Cowboys, once venerated as the quintessential Americans, those guys haven't just been marginalized, they've been vilified. Cowboys were the source material for countless movies and TV shows. When's the last time Hollywood made a cowboy flick? Now cowboys are bad, because, well, where does one start? They carried and used guns, bad. They fought Indians, bad. They drank whiskey, bad. They hung out at saloons, bad. With dance hall girls, bad. They herded cattle for beef to be eaten, bad. They rode alone and lived free and asked nobody's permission for anything. They were unapologetically male, bad, 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 bad. So how much longer will it be until a hive of endomorphic cretins of multiple genders decides to brigade the Big Texan and get it canceled? They're already doing the same to people who only pretended to be cowboys, like John Wayne. The Big Texan will also be canceled because it doesn't virtue signal or spew the mandatory commie words, sustainability and renewable. The carnival-like structure isn't LEEDS compliant. And inside is a harmless shooting gallery. And worst of all, the restrooms are marked men and ladies. When we visited, it had just opened in the morning. Inside were cleaning crews mopping floors and kitchen people lugging crates of food and bartenders setting up. And I looked at all of them, hardworking people, and I thought, I hope you're all learning to code. Along the journey, in the South especially, we passed many Bass Pro Shops. I had never been inside one, and some of them, they're gigantic with these eye-popping designs. I'd never seen one in the L.A. vicinity, and so finally, heeding their siren call, we stopped at one in Oklahoma. The place was huge. Outside were glitzy metallic flake bass boats and jet skis and quad runners. In the middle of them was a guy in a Santa suit ringing his bell beside a Salvation Army kettle. And I recalled that some years ago, the chain Target banned those Santas from their stores. Fuck Target. Way to go, Bass Pro Shops. Inside was a wonderland. Every imaginable piece of fishing gear. Bows, arrows, slingshots, deer stands, knives, ATVs, car and truck accessories, tents and sleeping bags, and guns. Shotguns and semi-autos and revolvers and AR-15s. It was insane. Camo in endless patterns and sizes. Little tiny camo outfits and dresses for boys and girls. Everywhere you looked were stuffed trophies. Bears and badgers and ducks and pheasant and mountain lions and elk and deer and buffalo. But that gun department, man, it was humming. I've never seen anything like it. I stood there like Dorothy in Oz. I had an epiphany, not too unlike hers. If you recall, at the end of her wild adventure, her realization was the simple phrase, "There's no place like home." My brain was firing with multiple realizations. First was, I should live where they have stores like this. Clearly it's a multi-billion dollar enterprise, and whoever runs it ain't dumb. They build them where they know their customers will be. And that's where I should be. I've never shot a deer, probably never will. But I like guns and the secure feeling you get when one is within reach, even though all mine were lost in a tragic boating accident. I love boats, too. I love to fish. I'd love to have a bison head hanging in the breakfast nook. I even own some camo apparel. The next realization was that every fucking thing in that store was designed and manufactured to serve a unique market. And that market is people who get their enjoyment either alone or in very small groups, most often the family. That store probably had an inventory of hundreds of thousands of products. Not one of them was made for the hive. Nothing even for large teams. Didn't see a baseball bat or a hockey stick or a football helmet. Everyone inside seemed friendly, polite. Most faces did not wear a mask. Outside in the parking lot was a sea of pickup trucks. I realized that Bass Pro Shops are the true cultural divide in these divided states. Their customer base is comprised of what I termed classic Americans in episode 286. The coastal elites would not be caught dead in one of those stores. They hate every bow, arrow, gun, knife, ATV, camo outfit, and stuffed trophy. They'll eat Chateaubriand all day long because, well, it's slaughtered out of sight at some distant meatpacking plant. But the dude who drops a deer and dresses it out himself in the woods and eats that venison all winter long, well, he's a redneck asshole who killed Bambi. The coastal elites despise every person who buys things at a Bass Pro Shop. They hate their Hemi-powered pickups. They hate their trucker caps. They hate their hillbilly music. They hate the flag on their front porch. They even hate their homeschooled children. But what they hate most of all, and they do not realize it, is the fact that if the well-oiled but very fragile machinery of 21st century America, if that machinery threw a bearing or blew a gasket from a natural disaster, or political upheaval, or even a war, those dudes in their camo and pickup trucks, they'd probably get by. They could feed and defend themselves and their families. But those hive dwellers, ooh. When they call 911 and nobody answers, which seems to be happening with alarming regularity, well, they're fucked. If the supermarket shelves are picked clean in a day because of the latest panic, they're fucked. If the main boiler breaks down in the hive they live in, they're fucked. That's the real root of their hatred. No matter what happens, the Bass Pro Shop guys can kind of hack it alone, but the hive dwellers, they're going down with the hive. When I leave California, I'm going somewhere that's within an hour of a Bass Pro Shop because Dorothy was right. There's no place like home. Stop by the show page at thatlarryshow.com where you will find some fabulous images of the places I've been talking about. The Big Texan, the 72-ounce steak, Casey Jones Village, stuffed bears at the Bass Pro Shop, and more. While you're there, click a subscribe button, Apple, Stitcher, wherever you download. That way you never miss an episode. If you like what you heard, take a second and throw the show a 5-star review. And if you really like what you heard, click that Patreon button. When you become a patron, you are automatically a member of the Take No Shit Dojo from whence this show emanates each week. There you will find the fellowship of other classic Americans such as yourself. No commies, no creeps, no coastal elites. You'll also get access to dozens of bonus episodes, like the crossover one I just posted. Carl of Who Are These Podcasts and I ganged up on three of the worst podcasters ever, and they were all presidential wannabes. Have a listen, you'll like it. Write to me at thatlarryshow@gmail.com. Between episodes, why not follow the show on social media, have a couple of giggles. There's a private Facebook group. We're also on Twitter, Instagram, and Gab. Just plug That Larry Show into the search bar, and you'll find us. I'll see you next Wednesday. And until that time, take no shit.